You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. You can help get the Henday built.
Yeah, Edmonton Oilers are 7-1 on a night where Connor McDavid, for his standards, has a quiet night. Leon Draisaitl just pumps in 4 points, 2 goals and 2 assists, and the Oilers skate away with a 5-2 win. Now those two are tied atop the league scoring race with 17 points. It's such a huge weapon to have, and I think as great as McDavid's been, like, Draisaitl probably still doesn't get talked about enough that, you know, on any given night, Draisaitl can be the leader of the team.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely can be, no question. Like, that's the thing. Like, I was thinking about it this morning. In terms of the best offensive players in the world, the guys that just straight-up generating offense, I mean, the Oilers, to have two of them, if not the two best, two of the, yeah, I don't know, let's just say the two best. Like, the stats keep showing over and over. I mean, what an unbelievable... What an unbelievable thing to have at your disposal. So kind of, you know, however your goalie's playing or your top D pairing or this or that or whatever, you've got a chance because they just generate offense at such an overwhelming rate. Draisaitl just 4 points. And, I mean, lots of other guys made great plays and helped him generate those points for sure. But at the same time, he just makes things happen. The number of high-skill, ridiculous plays that he makes shift to shift. You know, when he's playing well, just his IQ with the puck is just through the roof. I mean, like, 8 out of 10 plays, if he has the puck on his stick 10 times, say, I would guess that he either makes a positive or a neutral play 8 out of 10 times. Maybe the odd off play once or twice out of every 10, but he's just so smart with it. And to have guys on the ice that play the amount of minutes they play that have the hockey IQ with the puck that those guys do, it's just... it's unreal, man. And a night like that just shows you can be either one of them.
Well, and the good news for the Oilers is that, you know, McDavid has a quiet night. Evan Bouchard, you know, probably had his worst game of the season last night. You know, his coach admitted Bouchard himself said it. And they still win 5-2. So, you know, when you have players who spend a lot of the team play some of the most minutes and they have a kind of a meh night, you still win 5-2. Like Mikko Koskinen, give him credit. He made some big saves when needed. Their power play did what it did. And their penalty kill, right? Another area we probably haven't touched on because their power play is so ridiculous. But the Oilers' penalty kill is 91.3% right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a big part of that. Goaltending is always a big part of that. But they've also got... and they got some new guys on these units, right? They've been good for a few years, but they've introduced some new guys on these units, and they're doing a good job. Like, one of the things I will say about Bouchard, like, the guy is not afraid to step in front of a shot and block a shot if need be on the penalty kill, and that's an absolute prerequisite for tip and for play fair to use a guy in that spot, and he's doing that. You know, CC has done some good work. Like, yeah, man, they're special teams. I mean, their penalty kill and their power play are just, they're crushing. And it's supposed to be a weapon. It has been this year. I think that 5-on-5, they have more options and are more dangerous. I'm not sure exactly what the numbers show, but my sense of it is there's more danger more often out there, guys that actually are a threat to do something offensively. So pretty well-rounded, man. I mean, look at the record. You know, it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not. It's pretty legit here, and their game is far from perfect, but... you don't accidentally fall into this record.
No, not at all. And you look at, like, Zach Cassian has 4 5-on-5 points. McDavid has 6. You know, the gap between guys, last year it was McDavid and Draisaitl, and they were so heads and shoulders ahead of everybody else. And now you've got other guys that are producing at 5-on-5. And, you know, last night, Yamamoto finally gets a goal. It was a nice goal. So you wonder if maybe that jumpstarts him a little bit. Duncan Keith scores in his 1,200th game. His first goal as a member of the Edmonton Oilers. Kyle Turris scores a goal. Like, they got some production now from some other players, which is what they need.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder, too, with Yamamoto. I'm going to be really interested to see what happens with him because I've kind of maintained all along that the overall quality in his play was there. It was about finishing. It was about taking advantage of his best opportunities. And confidence with this player would make a big difference. So he didn't just bang one in the crease, right? He didn't just take a pass and flip it into the net. That was a nice goal. Like, it was breaking in and, you know, and beating a goaltender with a nice move. You know, that should be a confidence-building goal for him. So let's watch his game, the next couple of games, and see if there's a little more pep in his step, a little more offensive swagger. I think he's still susceptible to the highs when things are good and the lows when things are bad, confidence-wise. So I'm interested to see what he can do.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. You look at Mikko Koskinen, Shogger. There was a lot of people felt like, oh, he can't play too many games in a row. Now, the difference of, I don't think it was ever the amount of games he played. It was the amount of games he played in a short period of time, right? Like, the Oilers haven't played a lot of hockey, in their first eight games of the season, right? When you compare it to it, I think they played the fewest games in the NHL. They're tied with a few other teams. Like, they've had a lot of downtime. Considering that they started, you know, a little bit earlier than some teams, like Calgary, and them played the same amount of games, but Calgary didn't start until the Saturday, and the Oilers played their first game on that Wednesday. So fatigue's definitely not a factor here. Mike Smith looks like he's getting closer every day. He spent the entire up tempo part of practice in his own net with Koskinen in the starter's net. So I wonder if Smith's getting close, and you know, now they don't play again. They play Friday, but then they don't play until next week on that road trip. So I do wonder if do they ride out Koskinen in the next two games just to give Smith that extra full week.
It all depends on what the reports are on Smith, right? It all depends on what the training staff, the doctors are saying. So if they say, listen, he's fine and he could go, but would another 5 days help him? Heck yeah. If that's the case, then sure. I mean, Mikko's playing well. Like, I mean, the guy's got a .933 save percentage. So I think it just depends on what's in those medical reports. And if Mike Smith can benefit from more rest, I mean, if he's just ready to go and they're like, no, he's ready. He's in shape. He's ready. He's not going to hurt it. He's all good. Then I think he probably plays one of the games this week, right? Whether it's, you know, maybe the Friday or... but I do think that with Mikko playing as well as he is, it allows them to be extra cautious with Mike Smith. I believe they would have been cautious to begin with, but maybe it just has them go, yeah, no, for sure, let's get sit him one more game, and it gets him an extra 4 days rest and 4 days practice and preparation time. Well, great. You know, so I think it allows him to be extra cautious. And Koskinen's playing well enough right now, I think, to afford them that.
Yeah, and you know what? He's been good. I probably think you have to look at the human side of it from you know, him not being around his family. I think, you know, any dad will tell you, you know, to get to see your kids some days, it makes a bad day very good all of a sudden, especially with their little. They don't even care what dad does. They're just like, hey, dad's home. We get to play with them, right? And he takes away all their – there's no bringing the rink home when you got 4 and 2-year-olds, right? They're
well,
just like
– listen. I completely agree with you. There's not one of us out there that wouldn't have put our name on that contract when it was put in front of us. So
100%.
That's not his fault, right? That's his deal. Have there been stretches and times where he hasn't played well enough? For sure. He's the first one to admit that. So admits and knows there were times he wasn't good enough, put in the work, came back, pretty honest assessment of himself last year and some of what was wrong. And he's done nothing but come through this year. He had the one game where he was a little bit off. Everyone's going to have those games. You know, in his six games played, he's got a .933 save percentage and a 2.21 goals against average. So he's delivering, right? And a lot of the frustration around Mikko Koskinen in this city has to do with his contract, and I understand that. I do. But when you just look at what he's done, I mean, he's – a guy that came off of a difficult stretch for times last year, probably got beat up more than he deserved overall, and has come in and really improved. So, and on the human side of it, yeah, you can totally understand how the isolation last year might have gotten to a guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially without his family. Now you look ahead, the Edmonton Oilers. You know, it's funny how some nights you're just not going to have it. And I think defensively was a little bit weaker than they were against Vancouver. Vancouver was maybe their best game overall defensively, I found. And, you know, the Oilers have a chance to tie a record. They've only ever won 8 of their first 9 games once in franchise history.
Oh, so, really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So they can look – and they've never won 9 of the first 10. So technically, if they win their next 2, they could do something that no Oilers team has ever done, start a season
right
hot.
Groundbreaking. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, you got to figure the group will be up for the game on Friday night, Kevin Lowe night, and there'll be lots of energy in the building, and New York Rangers are in town. That's a novelty item. Feels like it's been a while since they were here, so that'll be a good one. You get Nashville tomorrow night. Yeah, there's definitely some potential. You got Detroit coming through after that. So, I mean, I would look at all of these matchups, Nashville, Rangers, and Detroit, on any given night, I would say the Oilers should beat those teams. So, yeah, they've got a good opportunity here. We'll see. And then back-to-backs where in Boston and Buffalo, I think. So, yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of nights this year, Gregs, where we're saying, oh, boy, the Oilers are going to really be in tough here and they'll be clear underdogs. I don't think they're going to be clear underdogs on many nights this year, do you?
Well, not clear underdogs, I wouldn't think. Not when you have the league's two leading scorers, no. I am curious, though. Like, outside of Calgary, I do understand when people are saying, okay, they beat Arizona, they beat Vancouver twice, they've beaten Seattle, you know, they beat a depleted Vegas team. So it will be nice, I think, to see. And, hey, there's still a skill level in beating the teams you should beat. Not everybody does that. Tampa Bay's lost to Buffalo this year and some other teams, so I'm not ripping them. But I am curious to see how the Oilers will do because, you know, Nashville, they play in Calgary tonight. That's a game that Edmonton should win. Even if they're rested, or evenly rested, I would say that's a game Edmonton should win. New York's a pretty good team. New York, you know, with Calgary, that would be their top team. Then they got Boston, St. Louis, Winnipeg. So they get into a little bit of a stretch. So, you know, that road trip will give us a little bit more of that Boston game on the 11th. We'll see. But, yeah, like when you look at the Oilers' schedule, there's not a lot of teams that are clearly better than Edmonton. There might be three or four, but that's about it.
Yeah, and that's my point, is I think they're arriving into this stage where they have a real chance to be talked about among the upper echelon teams in the league this year. And regular season performance is one thing, and I think they're a team that sets up well to do really well in the regular season because their power play is so dominant and they have the players they have. It's always tougher in the playoffs, right? The penalties go away. We see that. We know how the game changes. But I think on a lot of nights they're going to be there. I don't think they are in any way, shape, or form viewed as an easier spot on the bingo card for anybody. It used to be, you know, yeah, they've got McDavid and yeah, they got Dreisaitl, but if you just do this, you can expose them. I think some of that, if you just do this, some of that is starting to disappear. They're not. The rest of their lineup isn't as easy and out as it was before, and we'll see. You know, we'll see. It's still fairly early, but the trends are good and it looks good.
Shager, have yourself a good one. Quickly, give me your thoughts on the Arbuckle. I know Farhan Lalji, $340,000 for Nick Arbuckle.
Like, yeah. I mean,
isn't that surprising?
Significant salary.
Yes, 100%. Yes, I agree with you.
Like, wasn't Trevor Harris in that range?
Well, no, he was actually a little bit higher than that on his original one,
like,
but then
high
he took
threes or something like
then
that.
He got cut back. So yeah, it's I was a little surprised by that, considering that this is the fourth team now Arbuckle's been on in 2 years.
Well, and when they traded Trevor Harris, they talked about how much faith they have in Taylor Cornelius and how they believe that he, you know, has the potential to be the guy, and how this season. So, I mean, they trade Trevor Harris because of the promise that they see in this other guy, and then they sign another guy and give him a ton of money. Now, I'm not sure, is Cornelius signed through next year as well? Like, do they have both these guys guaranteed for next year? I would assume Cornelius.
Yeah, Cornelius has a contract, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you pay Arbuckle what you need to come in, but that's starter's money that he just got paid. Like, clear-cut starter's money. So what's happening with the plan for Cornelius here? You know, because they just gave another guy starter's money. So definitely have some questions. We'll be down there a little later this week, and we can maybe ask some of them. But interesting. And then I think it also speaks to, for anybody wondering what the scenario was with Brock Sunderland moving forward and into next season, it's one thing to be allowed to use a third-round draft pick, maybe a second-round draft pick to make a trade. That's one thing. It's another thing to be able to go and hand out a $300,000-plus contract on a guy. I mean, that absolutely gets run through the board, I would assume, and that it would, you know, all that stuff would be pretty transparent. So it also just makes me, you know, wonder where they're at with Brock and if he's still able to make moves like that, if he isn't more solid than many think he might be. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was saying, when I saw that contract be announced, I was like, it's almost like the board of directors and president have just said, we're sticking Stan with what we have here. And if they do that, that's the results are, they don't lie. That would be, like, unless the goal of the organization is to just drive deeper into the ditch, I'm not sure what the plan is.
Yep. We'll see.
Thanks, Shogart. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.